Welcome to another week of Monday afternoon here on the Michigan Avenue in the Showcase Studio of the Allstate Showcase Studio. Thanks very much for tuning in. If it's Monday, that means the Inno boys are here. We'll talk to them in just a couple of minutes about some of the hot tech and Inno stories going on in Chicago. Max Temkin from Cards Against Humanity will be along a little bit later. Their latest cause is the legalization of marijuana in Illinois. They just sold a new pack of cards, raised, I think, $70,000 in a couple of weeks that they're donating to the cause, and they say they're not done. So, you know, Max is a funny guy. He's a creative guy, but he's also a guy who's got real drive for a number of social issues, and this is the latest one. So we'll talk to him a little bit about that. And then Randy Schaefer, digital editor at the Chicago Tribune, will be along a little bit later as well to talk about what's going on in social media. But we start with the Inno boys. Jim Dahlke, the associate editor, managing director, Will Flanagan in the studio. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Steve.
What's up, Steve? How are you?
Not bad. So, you know, I was coming in this morning listening to political talk about how the Democrats need to come up with a message. They need to come up with a theme, a leader, kind of everything, right? But you guys are writing about from the tech standpoint, that there's a Chicago-based sort of funding mechanism geared at trying to get them set up when it comes to social media and things like that. Data, anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a Chicago-based group here that has really set out to sort of find startups that can help the Democrats in 2018 and beyond. It's a Chicago-based group called Higher Ground Labs, and it's actually based from a group of former Obama campaign veterans who have obviously are past the campaign now and now are doing different things in technology and in business and in politics, and they have sort of formed this group called Higher Ground Labs, where they've already deployed $1.5 million into 10 startups. They just named the 10 startups last week. One of those startups is Ballot Ready, a Chicago startup that we've talked to you about before that's
right.
Doing some interesting things around keeping voters informed at the polls. So they have an app that really gets you up to speed on everything from the national elections to your local elections and sort of everything in between. And it's just an interesting look at the way Higher Ground is sort of funding startups that really are going to try to hopefully back the Democrats.
Yeah, a couple of things are interesting about this one. One is that the startups can kind of be broken down into two categories. Startups that help you obtain information and intelligence quickly. That is one of the issues why people are not voting, is because they just don't have the information. The other one is you have that very loud vocal friend. We are going to provide you with the tech and social tools that you need to scale your voice. So now we are empowering one really passionate person to reach 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people. That's kind of the buckets I've seen a lot of these startups in. To me, one of the other interesting things about Higher Ground Labs is that a lot of these startups are tackling political problems. They're not just progressive political problems, but Higher Ground Labs is obviously focused on closing the progressive tech gap. So to me, when you look at some of these startups that they're bipartisan, that's going to be a hard balance for them who are in this incubator that is certainly not.
You mean is some of the companies getting money are bipartisan or nonpartisan?
Correct. Well, Ballot Ready being sort of the prime example,
right?
I mean, they are not just giving information on the Democratic candidates. I mean, they're trying to inform any voter heading to the polls, whether what side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah. And again, this is just another really cool example that at the end of the day of how tech mafias start, right? You get one really passionate big movement, one big success, and the 2008 campaign is a success, and you've seen that that's the trunk of this tech tree, and it is splintered out into so many different startups and organizations. And Chicago, because of that campaign, has kind of been a nice little hub for political tech innovation.
Well, what are I read, you know, and Jim in the piece runs down each of the companies, and it looks to me like it's a turnout thing, right? They're trying to, that's what they're focusing on. They're not so much mining data about, although there was one, and I don't remember the name of it now, that did polling, you said, in an interesting way. Tell me about them.
So, I mean, really what they're really doing is kind of taking a holistic approach at the campaign, right? So yes, part of it is polling, part of it is data, part of it is getting people out to vote. I don't think they're really focusing in on one thing. I mean, there are firms certainly out there that are all about mining data and getting like every piece of data about a voter that you possibly can. But the Higher Ground Lab seems to be taking kind of a much more holistic approach at what it's trying to fund and trying to help progressive candidates across the board.
All right, so we got that. Oh, I mentioned earlier you guys were sitting right here. Max Temkin's coming in, Cards Against Humanity. What sort of capsule do you put those nuts in? I mean, they're a pretty unique organization. I don't know if there's anything else like them around here in Chicago.
Cards Against Humanity?
Yeah.
Oh, we love covering Cards Against Humanity because when we, you know, one of the things we tried to do at Chicago Innovation is not make innovation seem like it's dominated by tech and digital. So what Cards Against Humanity does, yes, it's a card game, it's a board game, but these guys are super innovative. They have at their office, they have a co-working space, and they kind of incubate little kind of other Chicago video games. They do these add-on packs. Their campaigns on their site are really interesting, and I think it's always important for people to kind of understand that you don't have to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to be kind of a software engineer to be an entrepreneur. You can kind of have a creative, quirky idea and run with it.
Yeah, I like it that they have quirky ideas and then they sort of use that to develop other ideas as well. We'll talk to Max in a bit. All right, it's 12:18. Quick break, come back and talk about, well, maybe by then our Grubhub will have delivered our lunch. Steve Bertrand here on this Monday afternoon. Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno are in the studio as well. All right, so Grubhub last week purchased Eat24, and Andrea Haynes from Blue Sky Innovation, she's on Fridays. We talked about it a little bit there. But it's interesting because Grubhub seems to be maybe playing defense by offense a little bit. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think what you saw last week is it made two sort of moves in the food delivery space for companies whose food delivery efforts weren't quite scaling at the pace as some of the other food delivery companies, right? So it went in and got Yelp's food delivery business. It went in and got Groupon's food delivery business. So you sort of saw Grubhub kind of go in and really take away two of its kind of smaller-ish competitors and really kind of grow its market lead. The interesting thing for me is to kind of see where Grubhub goes from here. I mean, is it going to keep up the sort of spending spree? One possible acquisition target, right, could be Uber Eats, the food delivery arm from Uber. That's obviously a big successful part of what Uber does, and so maybe they're not sort of willing to get rid of that, but Uber does kind of at the moment have a lot going on and
on its plate, so to speak.
Unloading Uber Eats could be sort of getting back to basics for them.
Well, the other thing we didn't say, a part of their big week last week was their earnings report, which has far exceeded expectations as well.
Grubhub, yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, I think you're starting to see something that happens in every new tech cycle, which is everybody gets really excited. A lot of capital goes into something, and you get 100 food delivery startups, and they're super, super niche. We used to joke that I wanted to start a food delivery company only focused on chicken parm called Parm to Table. And that was...
I think that was one of our news...
That was one of our fake startups.
Fake or real, right.
Yeah, fake or real, yeah.
But it was a joke, but it was also... I made that joke enough for people like, oh, wow, that would work. Which tells you everything about how stupid growth in that sector got. So you're just seeing consolidation happen. This happens in any little vertical that kind of gets a little out of control. The big guy starts snapping up these that had a little bit of traction and energy in this region or that region. And now it's kind of steadying a bit.
Okay, so I was telling you guys off the air, Grubhub is one of those things that's been around in my mind forever, it seems like. And as I'm getting ready to talk to you, I realize I've never used Grubhub. I've never even thought of using Grubhub. If I'm at home and want to order out, I call the pizza joint or I call the Chinese restaurant. I never go through Grubhub. And I think the reason is because if I'm going to pay for an upscale or upper level restaurant food, you're paying so much money for it. I think I want to eat it there. I don't want to transport it here. But I must be in a minority.
I think so. I mean, what's great about Grubhub is, yes, it's a food delivery company, but they're really ahead of the curve on a lot of those kind of UX front end, back end changes where, the ability to reorder quickly, or instead of entering your credit card number, you just take a picture of your credit card and it uploads it. The alerts you get on your phone, hey, your pizza is getting prepared, now it's out the door. Those little things that make the experience seem seamless, Grubhub is usually kind of first with those. So yes, it's food delivery, food ordering, but it's a really innovative tech company doing cool things here.
And I think the sweet spot it hits at is, you know, this millennial generation is very, very foodie, but not always willing to drop like $100 out at a nice fancy restaurant, right? So when you order that in, instead of spending money on booze at the restaurant and appetizers,
you don't
and
pay tipping, $12 for your Pabst Blue Ribbon,
but you're still getting like really good food. So I mean, I think that's the difference, is that once Grubhub can get you, Steve, once you're like expanding your food ordering beyond just pizza and Chinese, like that's when Grubhub will really be like hitting the ground.
And you're still a millennial, right, Steve?
Oh yeah, I'm very much a millennial. I'm a two millennial. I think I'm an uber millennial. The other thing that struck me about this is the Yelp involvement in it. So now you can order Grubhub through Yelp or Yelp. What's the connection there, and why does that work for Yelp?
So Yelp users will still be able to order food delivery as they've if they've been using E24 before. It'll just be powered by Grubhub. So Grubhub will be the one sort of like handling the logistics and handling the delivery there. So you'll, when you order food through Yelp, you'll a Grubhub delivery guy will show up.
So Yelp sells it but keeps sort of the traffic.
Yeah, they keep people coming to the site, and Grubhub is also being able to kind of use their users to expand its reach as well.
Yeah, think how we talked last week about Braintree behind the scenes powering a lot of the payments, so you're using Braintree without even knowing it. I think that's how Grubhub would love this relationship with Yelp to work. You're ordering food via Yelp, and the only time you see Grubhub is when it pops up in an order receipt.
All right, we got a minute or two left. Other big news in the tech world in Chicago in the past several weeks, a couple weeks, has been the news last week that Howard Tolman is leaving 1871.
Yeah, for sure. It's a huge tech story here in Chicago. The past 3-4 years, the work he's done has really come into focus for me the more I've been traveling to other tech hubs around the Midwest and country. And everybody kind of says the same thing, which is, man, what we're missing, and this is in Cincinnati, Indianapolis, Milwaukee, Raleigh and Durham, even Atlanta and Miami. They say, you know what, man? We're missing in 1871. You're in Chicago. God, they do such great work. And as a billboard for innovation happening here, that's really Howard Tolman. Yes, of the $3 billion that's been invested in startups over the past 3 years, how much have those gone to companies that have come out of 1871? Not a ton, but people know that startups are here because of 1871, and that matters. That's what gets UIC students to stay here. That's what gets Springfield entrepreneurs to relocate, people in Cincinnati to consider moving here, because 1871 is this big beacon, and whether the data or metrics kind of back that beacon up, people know stuff's happening here because of him.
It's Will Flanagan, the general manager at Chicago Inno, Jim Dahlke, associate editor as well. Thanks, boys. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
I'm Steve Bertrand. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN this beautiful Monday afternoon. Let's go straight to the phone line. Max Temkin is on the line. Max, one of the co-creators of Cards Against Humanity, and he created that and just kept on going. Max, welcome back to the Business Lunch. How are things?
Hey, Steve. Things are good. Thanks for having me.
What are you having for lunch today at Cards Against Humanity? Come on, paint a picture. Take me in there. What's going on?
Oh, man. What time is it?
It's 12:30. It's 12:30, yeah.
What happened? I feel like I just woke up 2 seconds ago.
You didn't, did you? You've been up for a while, haven't you? Please tell me.
Oh, at least a half hour.
Well, you know, you guys know how I feel about you, and I've been talking about it earlier in the show. I love what you do in that you created something, you foster this sort of attitude day-to-day at the workplace, and then you use that energy to further causes that you think are important. There have been several, but the latest is this push toward legalization of marijuana. Tell me about the Weed Pack and how all of that came about.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for the kind words, by the way. That means a lot as a longtime listener. Well, we so as you know, at Cards, occasionally we come up with new products, new topics that we want to, you know, write jokes about, and we release those packs. And then, you know, oftentimes we will partner with an organization and have that pack sort of serve as a marketing tool and a fundraising tool for that organization. So we've done a number of these over the years, and they've been really successful. You know, on the part of Cards, I guess I don't know how great of like a business decision it is, because I guess we could just keep that money and no one would like get mad at us.
Yeah.
But I think it just sort of speaks for me of like, you know, it speaks to just the kind of fun that we want to have, the kind of people we want to be, the kind of organization that we want to run, that we partner up with these organizations. So the latest pack that we released is the Weed Pack. We did, it's 30 cards, all jokes about marijuana and junk food and sort of stoner culture. You know, not anything that obviously that we're familiar with. But we had to go out and do some research.
Well, that's the thing. You've got a vast pool of people from which to gather that research, Max.
That's right. We had to go to states where they have common sense decriminalization and drug laws, and talk to them about what it's like to smoke marijuana. So, of course, that's what we did. And we released this pack, and last week we announced a partnership with the Marijuana Policy Project, the MPP, and we're going to be working with them to support their legislative effort to regulate and tax marijuana just like alcohol in Illinois. And this is the organization that, of course, has been very successful in California and Colorado and many other states at legalizing marijuana in those states.
You know, I'm talking about it with people, and I'm tweeting about it, talking to you about it, and it always goes to the joke about what you're going to be eating chips or blah, 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 so that it becomes almost, right, it becomes a joke. And I wonder if that makes it easier or harder to fight this fight. You know what I'm saying? Because the jokes are there, but it's a very serious issue.
Well, in terms of the sort of prohibition against marijuana, I mean, you know, when we look for a comedy topic to write jokes about or make fun of, what we're always looking for is something that is sort of like on its face absurd, something that everyone knows is kind of ridiculous. So we can come in and just expose that absurdity and, you know, get a laugh from people. And it is, I mean, when you think of the fact that we have prohibition against marijuana in the state, but alcohol is like perfectly legal, it is absurd because people get drunk and they like, you know, drive their car into a school bus or something. But people get high and they like, you know, take a bath and read a book or like eat Cheetos. Like it's so harmless. Like it's like, you know, the health effects aren't as bad. The addiction levels aren't as bad. There's just not really any reasonable argument in 2017. As to why Illinois would pursue this sort of prohibition policy.
And we need the money.
Yeah, I mean, that was the crazy thing was I thought maybe, you know, Illinois, you know, obviously, listen, you and I live in Chicago, and, you know, what did the Trump administration say? We have a cosmopolitan bias or whatever.
Very cosmopolitan, Max. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So maybe we're surrounded by people who, you know, think this is common sense, and I was thinking to myself, well, maybe, like, it's not popular downstate, but... You know, I just saw the recent polling on this, and the approval for regulating and taxing marijuana like alcohol is at almost 75% statewide, including over 50% downstate. So it's like, you know, to me, it's like this is supposed to be a democracy. Like when people make up their minds on something and they learn about the issue and they decide that criminalizing marijuana is just a policy that does not make any sense. Well, where's the part where the people get to have their way? Where's the part where we just get to have common sense drug laws? And new tax revenue for the state. Like, who is against that? Like, you're telling me there's something that 75% of people in the state support that would pay for our schools and our roads, and we're not doing it?
Right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And so, okay, so you sell the cards. You raise 70 grand in a couple weeks. People can still buy the cards, right?
Yeah, it's an evergreen product. So if people just go Google Cards Against Humanity or go to cardsagainsthumanity.com, you can find the game and all the expansion packs. And actually, I was just checking up before the show, and we've raised about $85,000 for this effort. So, yeah, so that'll be spent on in partnership with the MPP. And you know, I know they're sort of staffing up in Illinois, and they're really getting ready to make this a major issue. You know, we're hoping to sort of secure commitments for all of the gubernatorial candidates and mayoral candidates to come out and support, regulating and taxing marijuana like alcohol. And, you know, obviously cards will do what we can to, you know, raise awareness and, you know, maybe poke a little fun at the issue, but make sure it's on people's minds because,
tell me about that. What are you going to do in the race for governor to try to make it an issue?
Well, you know, the first thing was I just posted on Twitter last week and I sort of like at replied all the gubernatorial candidates and I was like, hey, you know, at JB and Amaya and Daniel Biss. And I was like, will you guys all pledge that if you're the governor, you will support regulating and taxing marijuana like alcohol? And I got immediate replies from almost all the candidates saying that that's part of their policy and they would like to make it happen for Illinois. And, you know, that's encouraging to me. You know, when I look out at you know, politics, I'm sure like you have the same feeling that I do of like you look out at political news, and it just seems like everyone has gone insane. Like the world is irrational, and people are acting in really often frightening and confusing ways. To me, if something that gives me hope is picking some common sense issue like ending prohibition of marijuana and seeing that there is a movement, that there is progress being made in our home state, and that you know this is something that's on the horizon with just a little push.
Max Temkin, one of the co-creators, Cards Against Humanity. Good to talk to you, friend. I can't wait for the next time.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter, at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook. I've got a public page, Steve Bertrand, as well. Click on there, follow me there, and we'll keep you posted with what's going on. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital editor for the Chicago Tribune. Randy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so bring that microphone right in front of you, and You sent me a story about, I can't wait to get your take on it. So it's in the Weekly Standard, which is a pretty conservative political sort of magazine. I don't know what that matters. I just didn't expect to see a story about social media, influencers, right? It's a camp for kids who want to become social media stars.
Yeah, so if your kid is not really feeling up to, like, cooking or, you know, Boy Scout campfire starting, you can send them to Social Star Creator Camp in Los Angeles.
And, well, my first thought was, to, of course, get off my lawn. What's this about? Kids should be shooting arrows at animals instead.
They should be learning how to build tents, yes. But this camp has 40 teens, and they're all learning about how to create content that will build them a fan base and will attract sponsorships from companies. Basically, they are learning how to be social media influencers.
Think of that?
Kind of goes both ways, I guess. I can see it, you know, get off my lawn. Kids should go be outside playing and fishing and camping and making friends. But also, you know, there are going to be a lot of people that shake their heads at this, but I work full time in social media. So this is kind of like a viable career camp option
right.
for kids.
I think it's genius. I think it's pretty cool because you're reading some of the seminars and the things that they do. You're teaching kids how to handle cameras and edit things and, you know, different skills that will serve them well. And if they're into it, you know, when you're a parent of a kid, you're sort of desperate to find something that they want to do.
Right.
And if this is what they want to do, although there was a seminar about how to monetize their posts, I don't know how good that is for a 10-year-old. But
well, and I do think this is kind of interesting because one of the biggest criticisms parents have with social media is that it makes their kids antisocial. So they're on social media, but it's a camp with other kids.
Right. So they go to a very social event to become a little more antisocial.
It's the best of both worlds as far as you can get into the 21st century, I guess.
So what do they get when they graduate? Do they get does one of the Kardashians retweet one of their tweets or what is it? What do they get out of it?
Maybe if they're lucky, they might get that verified coveted blue check mark.
Ah, very nice. Okay, tell me about this movie coming out Friday, Ingrid Goes West.
So Ingrid Goes West is a movie that kind of like, it's a satire about the perils of social media envy. And so it was compared to an episode of Black Mirror, I think. I'm not very familiar with it. But basically, it's about this woman who wasn't invited to a wedding. And so she kind of decides to head to Los Angeles and reinvent herself. And this, you know, this theme's kind of been done before over and over again. But she decides to reinvent herself as an Instagram celebrity. So she models herself after a famous account that she follows on social media.
And so she gets slighted by not being accepted into this wedding, not party, but the wedding celebration.
Yeah.
So she feels, you know, I'm going to use the word jilted, but it's not jilted in the wedding sense. So she's going to, damn it, I'm going to become a whole new person.
Yep, reinvents her life.
But she doesn't invent it. She kind of co-opts someone else's life.
Yes, exactly.
And so she goes out and just sort of takes these attributes. And we've talked about this before where, you know, the people who post on Instagram that we think that we're seeing their whole life and we're really not.
Exactly.
I thought it was interesting, the review of this movie or the article about it said that they intentionally didn't want to make... So when we see films, I'm watching The Fall right now. I don't know if you saw it on Netflix.
No.
Really good series. But, you know, the bad guy, he's a little nutty. So I can distance myself from him saying I'm not that nutty.
Right.
And I'm not going to be that guy. So in this movie, they intentionally did not make her mentally unstable in any way. Because they wanted us all to see part of ourselves in her, right?
Yeah, exactly. They were very clear about how they made sure that they did not assign her any sort of mental illness when they kind of gave her this character, this persona to portray.
I thought it was interesting, too, that one of the actresses in the movie was not on social media.
Yeah, that'd be Elizabeth Olsen.
And what happened then?
She joined Instagram and she found out it was actually pretty cool and she was enjoying using it for promotion and stuff like that, but it just kind of goes to show that social media is dangerous.
Right. And then right after that, she's got like 600,000 followers. So
she doesn't need to go to that influencer camp.
Well, I don't think it was really very hard for her. I could
so
go
either.
For 600,000 followers. All right, Randy Schaefer, that's all the time we have, I think. Thanks for coming by today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next week. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the fact that people like to take pictures of popular buildings when they're on vacation.
No, we didn't.
That'll come up next
Maybe
time.
Maybe next week.